coming to you from the HagmanReport.com studio, located in the Keystone State, birthplace of a mighty nation. It's your host, Doug Hagman.
And this is the Hagman Report for today. It is Wednesday, May 6th, 2020. Some of the headlines, of course, that you're seeing today. American businesses shed some 20.236 million jobs. That was just in April alone. Of course, we're being gamed the response to the coronavirus crisis, as evidenced by James O'Keefe, Project Veritas, CBS fake news, aired staged Chinese Communist Party virus testing site with fake patients. That was aired by CBS News. President Trump says the U.S. must reopen. By the way, Twitter is now engaged in Orwellian post wrong think. Twitter will now warn you if you are about to post anything that's against their ideological drivers. And of course, news about Joe Biden, sexual predator, as he is known in some circles. Joe Biden voted to block creation of Senate office that handles sexual harassment complaints. Of course you would. James Comey's best friend forever, BFF, FBI Director Chris Ray, should be careful about criticizing prior leadership. This a warning from Comey. Think about that. You've got you've got this push toward making, have you seen this, making D.C., Washington, D.C., a state, the 51st state? I have to ask Dr. Richard Proctor about how that would work out. Now, a couple of other things as well. we're seeing a whole bunch of blowback against these lockdowns all across our nation. Some people are asking, which has more rights, a church or a liquor store? What's essential? Who determines what's essential in terms of essential businesses? On and on and on with respect to this coronavirus response. It's not the virus, it's the response to the virus that are making a little tyrannical despots all across, you know, the United States. I just want to cite something here, this warning from George Washington. In President George Washington's 1796 farewell address to the American people, he warned against those in the federal government encroaching upon other areas of government in violation of the U.S. Constitution. Such encroachments, noted President Washington, will result in a real despotism. His warning is as timely now than ever before. Most assuredly today. Now, I will post that address in its entirety on HagmanReport.com. But the fact is, George Washington clearly understood the importance of checks and balances in the Constitution to prevent the federal government from morphing into this utopian tyrannical machine, and which is doing right now. He knew that if the executive branch of the government began infringing on the duties of the other two. In other words, the executive branch infringing upon the duties of the judicial and legislative branches, the power would eventually be concentrated in one all-powerful despotic machine. Now, one can argue that maybe the intelligence community as a subset has done that, or the judiciary as another branch has done that. The self-proclaimed progressives, the communists in this country, who find themselves in powerful positions inside the Beltway, they seem propelled by their totalitarian impulses to always seek to centralize power in one branch of the government. And we're seeing that now. And normally it's the executive branch. Now, the communist presidents, or the communist-leaning presidents, the leftist presidents, I guess in an umbrella term, have viewed Congress as this impediment to their goals, unless both the House and Senate are in their hands as well. All right, so they also view the Supreme Court as an impediment unless they've got the deck stacked there. And we're seeing some interesting things with the Supreme Court now. But Ruth Bader Ginsburg, I mean, talk about Weekend at Bernie's, right? So anyway, the leftists in this country, those who adhere to the globalist mindset, the anti-constitutionalists, what they're doing right now is they're rejecting the checks and balances and any other restrictions that are contained within the Constitution, because you might look at that as most assuredly as a contract, but as a limitation of the power that the government has. But the restrictions in the Constitution are designed to protect Americans from this despotic government, specifically those provided in the states and to the people. In this progressive elitist thinking, most Americans are just too stupid, too ignorant to self-govern. We're going to be talking about that today with Dr. Richard Proctor, who's my guest. The battle in which we find ourselves today, and I think it's an ongoing battle, to preserve and defend our God-given freedoms will never end. There will always be social totalitarians, tyrants. They're always going to be out there. And especially as we see a crisis being exploited, or a problem being exploited, or an event being exploited, regardless of what it is, there will be those who will go after the power and the tyrannical authority, usurping the Constitution or attempting to do that. If you, and I highly suggest this, in fact, boy, I would almost, if I was running a class, if I was running an educational video conference with everyone out there watching this, this would be required reading, and this is Saving the Constitution. It's available at provisinstitute.com. That's P-R-O-V-I-S, provisinstitute.com. That's Saving the Constitution. There it is on your screen. Dr. Richard Proctor is the author. And also A Constitution If You Can Keep It. All right. And that's this spiral bound book. And if you are engaged right now, and I know a lot of people are, if you're engaged in homeschooling, folks, please do yourself, your children a favor. A Constitution If You Can Keep It. That would be great for the homeschoolers. And again, the keystone of work by Dr. Richard Proctor is Saving the Constitution. This is one of my favorite books in terms of explaining the Constitution. He does such a great job in explaining the Constitution from an expert academic viewpoint, distilling it into information that you and I can understand. Now, blocked by my chair is the Liberty series. Or no, it's not. It's over there behind the bag of coffee. I'm sorry. Above the pictures. It's the Liberty series. That's an advanced documentary in written form that goes through our history. Why did I spend so much time on that? Well, look at where we're at today. Look at everything that's going on today, the infringement of our constitutional rights. Look at what happened in Texas, Dallas County. You had this sheriff roll out this MRAP. And real quick, before I bring Dr. Proctor on, I'm not sure, Eric the Tech, how are you today?
I'm doing good.
You know, I'll tell you what, so blessed to have Eric the Tech he is a wonderful, wonderful tech, and he's also my son-in-law. So I appreciate him being here and taking care of all the technical aspects of things. He's the unsung hero of the Hagmann Report, and that is at Real Tech Eric on Twitter. You can follow him there. I know I do. I stalk him on Twitter. But anyway, I'm going to thank him for that. But if you can go to my personal Twitter, I don't know if you can. We didn't talk about this before. You will see something in the timeline, and I didn't write this. I didn't tweet about it. I didn't retweet it or anything like that, but it's in the timeline. And it shows events in Texas. Again, this peaceful protest. People want to return to work. So they held a protest about this bar reopening. And I'm just giving you the high points. I'm not telling you. Well, they're unarmed. It's a protest. And the sheriff brings out this MRAP, a military vehicle, against these unarmed protesters. And I'm thinking, is this America or is this communist China? And the same or similar events taking place all over the country. May 4th of 1970, four dead in Ohio. You remember that? The National Guard, United States National, or the National Guard here in the United States, shot four students and wounded, I think, 60-some others, 68, I believe, on May 4th of 1970. That was 50 years ago. And since that time, what have we seen? Ruby Ridge, Waco, on and on and on. The murder of Lavoie Finicum. And again, I could just go on with respect to all of the events. Tell me where the Constitution, where our Constitution exists today, 50 years post Kent State. And I remember watching that. I remember being, as a young man, being horrified at what I was witnessing. America was divided in 1970. And you remember the year or two before that, cities burning, Cleveland, half of Cleveland burned through riots and social upheaval. Hey, go back to the Kavanaugh hearings. Think about what you saw there. The leftist attempting to breach the doors of the Supreme Court. Oh, really? We have a tarantula in here? Eric the Tech just walked in my office. You get it? Yeah. Could people see that? Can we rewind the tape or what? Apparently a
spider dropped in front of the camera.
Let me tell you something. That was, there's a conspiracy, I tell you. I don't like spiders. So
broadcasting from a cave.
Really though? Yeah. A spider, huh? Oh man. Was it a big one?
It's on your shoulder.
No, don't do that to me. Don't do that to me. Mm-mm. No. That's not even fun. Fun? No. All right. I don't want to waste Dr. Proctor's time. But here it is. Yeah. And here we are. And think about this. Here we are broadcasting from my home office. All right. Why? Well, shut the studio down. Keep people, for example, my daughter who does a lot of work and a few other people in and out, you know, keep them at home. Why? Well, because we can do that. Eric the Tech needs to be on premise, but other than that, you know, but see how many people are in the position of losing their livelihoods. We see businesses unable to I'm not going to repeat myself, but unable to reopen. Why is it out of an abundance of caution? Is it legitimate? You see people forced to wear masks again yesterday, very quickly. My wife said, look, I'm not going to take you back in the store. I'm not going to do it. I went in the store and she made me go sit in the car. She said, you're embarrassing me. I can't take it. Well, first of all, I didn't wear a mask in. And when somebody said, wear a mask, I said, no, I don't think so. No, thank you. but it's the law. Really? Show me the law. Well, the governor said everyone's going to wear a mask. I said, he didn't call me up. You know what? He never sent me an email or a memo. I'm not okay with wearing a mask. Well, it's just the right thing to do. Says who? Dr. Proctor, how are you, sir?
Oh, I'm doing good. I'm just sitting here chuckling about your fun event here in the store with the guards or the people or the clerks or whatever. I haven't had that same experience, but I've done the same thing. Criticized people, ridiculed them for wearing a mask. Oh, yes. Well, I understand that.
You know, it's so frustrating because, you know what, look, I'm a sensible guy. And if I really believed, and if I could be shown scientific evidence that wearing a mask would benefit me or, to some extent, I can understand where it helps. If you spit when you talk or if you, sneeze or whatever, I guess it provides some level of protection for the other person. But frankly, I think but to say it's a law, it's not a law. To say it's required, I suppose, if I put a sign on my door or hey, I own this property. So if I say, you know what, you can't come in unless you're wearing a pink t-shirt. I guess that's all right. Right. I don't know, but I think there's something much more nefarious behind it. You know, underneath all of this. So wherever you want to go, Dr. Proctor, I consider this your time.
Let's take a minute and talk about the mask issue here.
All right.
You just said that if it was on my property, I could do that. Yeah, you have property rights. So if the owners of Costco want to tell us all we have to wear a mask, they're within their rights.
Okay.
Now, going back to the governor, you said, show me the law. Well, there is no law. There is no ordinance. There's a proclamation. What's that got to do with the Constitution? We have a right to do with ourselves what we want to do. I mean, that's what the thing's written about. That's what the Revolutionary War was about. It was about the opportunity to live freely and in liberty with your own lifestyle, your own way. We're not subject to edicts by the state government that violate the Constitution. Every governor, every legislative, every executive officer has taken an oath to support the Constitution of the United States. That's in Article 6, Paragraph 3. Supporting the Constitution doesn't mean violating it or changing it whenever you feel like it. Oh, they say, oh, it's for health. Oh, that's health is such a big item. If health is so important, why didn't they stress it last year when we were in the flu season? Why was that not an instance? Oh, you know, tens of thousands of people died from the flu season. They have every year, but nobody seems to get excited about that. They proclamate what they want at the moment. And right now they want this. Why? Because somebody in the background has decided they want control of us. And those people are all mentioned in my Liberty series by name. Those individuals, even individuals of our current day, are mentioned by name. And they're the people doing this for control and power over us and to enslave us. Folks, this is not a mask wearing deal. And let's talk about the mask. You just said, Doug, show me proof that the mask will do well. Well, it doesn't. Doesn't do any well either direction. The only mask that will do any good are those masks with filtration systems that hang seal to your face and hang gizmos, whatever you want to call them, things off the side to filter the air both in and out. That's the only mask that will do. These little decorative things people are shoving on their faces are of no value whatsoever except to make them look better, and it doesn't do that either. There's nothing going on here. Everybody says, you've got to have a mask to do this, got to have a mask to do that. What kind of a mask? I'll put a mask on. Let me see. It'll be a Lone Ranger mask. I'll wear that mask. That'll be fun. That's a mask. Don't tell me I can't come in here. That's a mask. I mean, this is all ridiculous.
it reminds me, I don't know if you saw this. I think it was on Twitter or something. It was like 20 seconds. This woman went into a store to get to pay for gas that she got. She was wearing a mask, one of those soft cloth masks or surgical mask, style mask, and she cut a hole over her mouth and nose, nose and mouth. I thought it was just, and people were making fun of her. They were saying, how stupid, you know, this is, you know, this is moronic and she's a moron. And, you know, people were making fun of her and never thinking perhaps that was her statement. Look, I guess so. I have to wear a mask or I'm going to get $1,000 fine. I'll wear one, but nobody said you can't cut out the mouth and nose. I mean, I don't know what the deal was with that, but I thought that was so hilarious.
Now that $1,000 fine is absolutely horrid.
Yes.
I got something. I want to talk about something on that subject. Okay. I've been preparing this in my mind all week. I really have. I am really irritated. Let's assume I got to take care of something here. It's itching my nose. Okay. Let's assume that I got that citation for $1,000. Now they can give it to me. A policeman can hand it to me. That's all right. That's within his jurisdiction. That's within his right. So he handed it to me. Now, what do I do next? Well, no, I'm not saying that everybody ought to do this, but you should contemplate it. They're going to take you to court. Well, you're going to wander into the court. And the first thing you're going to look is you're going to look and see if there's a jury. There's no jury. Your Honor, I understand that I have the citation here, but this isn't maritime law. This isn't a ship. Where's the jury? I am guaranteed a jury on a crime. Is this a crime? Well, Article 5 says, now remember, you're talking to the judge and you're talking quietly and nicely. Article 5 says there has to be an indictment by a grand jury. I don't remember a grand jury indicting me for this event here. Is it a crime? Well, if it's not a crime, then why am I doing it? Why did he give me a fine? Oh, you're going to call it a civil thing. Oh, well, okay, a civil thing. That's covered by, guess what, Amendment 7, which says in Amendment 7 that you can, that you've got to have a jury. They've got to have a loss of $20. You've got to have, it's a civil case. You've got to be, it's got to be common law. Common law does not include maritime court. Maritime courts are, the original jurisdiction of a maritime court is the Supreme Court because it's an international water event. It's not an event of wearing a mask or not. Therefore, I think maybe I'll go home. Thank you very much for the day, but I think maybe I'll just go home. You have a nice day. Wait, this is a beauty. I'm going to throw you in jail. Well, Judge, you're right. You have the power to throw me in jail. You do not have the authority. They've given you the power to do it, and everybody says you've got it. The policeman will escort me and put me behind bars, but you have no authority to do that. And I'm going to invite the media to come in and explain to them that she has no authority to put me behind these bars. She has no authority. She's not a captain of a ship. This is not maritime or admiralty law. We're way beyond our Constitution. The Constitution gives me the right to have a jury trial. I didn't have one. If it's a crime, it gives me the right to a grand jury. I didn't have one. If it's a civil matter, we got to look at a $20 fine, a $20 injury. There isn't one. You, the judge, have taken upon your right yourself. You swore to uphold the Constitution when you took your oath of office. Well, if you're upholding the Constitution, as Article 6, Paragraph 3 says, you're going to defend the Constitution. That doesn't mean change it. That means go by its precepts. Well, the precepts are that the Fourth Amendment says that I'm secure in my person so I can walk where I want. The Fifth Amendment says that I've got to have a grand jury, indictment by a grand jury. The Sixth Amendment says I have a trial for a criminal and I can have witnesses. The Seventh Amendment says common law, it's a $20 fine, a $20 loss, and I've got to have a jury. Where are all these things that you swore you would uphold, Judge? Now, I know you can send me to jail, but I'm going to point these all things out to the media when they come to see me because they're going to do that. You know, we've got to draw the line somewhere. Now, I want to say this. A young lady in Wisconsin, I don't know if everybody's heard this or not. I just saw it this morning. A young lady in Wisconsin, Judge Rebecca Bradley, said to the counsel, the prosecution counsel that was standing there, counsel, tell me, where in the Constitution does it give you the right, or my client, not to, or your client, or the defendant, not to have the right to have a constitutional law? There's nothing in the Constitution that allows you to arrest this lady. There's nothing there. If you can find it, show it to me. Now, that's not what what she said exactly, but that's what she said. And there's finally somebody who's paying attention to their oath of office. She says the Constitution doesn't allow this, therefore the case is dismissed. Now, that's the way you do it. That's how it does. Folks, we're in the middle of a significant problem here, and we're acting like lemmings. We're acting like sheep. We're just going down the road saying, oh, well, yes, guess if the government tells me this, I best do it. Oh, no, what should I do? Stop it. Let's get busy, and let's stand up for our rights. What did she say? I think that just says, man up, Americans. Stand up for your rights. I think she said that also in that court case. Anyway, folks, we've got to do something. And we can't just sit around and allow these people to do this to us. Oh, boy, I got carried away again.
No, I want you to keep getting carried away. However, this sounds rather antiquated. I mean, your solution, and forgive me, and I want you to change my mind here. But again, I go back to thinking, because I see a lot of garbage on the internet, you know, I hearken back to this sovereign citizen movement where people are acting like idiots. And I mean that, you know, I'll just put a period there. But aren't we way past that? I guess, are we, because of the states, institute, or because of the federal government instituting all of these,
draconian is the word.
What's that?
Draconian.
Right. The rules for civil procedure and such. Haven't we tacitly accepted that? And aren't we beyond that to where we would become the, yeah, bring the media in, but they would be laughing at you or me, you know?
Oh, I hope they are. I hope they're laughing, but at least it'll be on tape.
Well, true. But now, would that work in all cases?
No, it won't work.
Okay. All right.
It won't work. But you got to do it anyway.
All right. All right.
You remember the young lady, Kim Davis? She went to jail for a week because she would not violate her responsibility. She went to jail for a week.
Right.
The criminal in case was the judge that sent her to jail. She nonetheless went to jail for a week because she would not sign documents that were against the law of Kentucky.
And Coach Dave Dobmeier supported Kim Davis, and we all supported Kim Davis actually in our programs, broadcasts, and such. And I'll tell you what, to see the ideological divide as a result, or to see that divide really come to the surface. So many people saying, well, she can't do that. Yes, you can. It was incredible for me I was incredulous by the, lack of knowledge and understanding of our legal system.
The Kentucky law at the time said homosexuals weren't to get married. It said that.
Right.
There you have it. She didn't want to sign the marriage licenses. They threw her in jail for 5 days, I believe is how long she was there. Well, the person that should have been in jail was the judge, because he's the one who violated the law.
Right.
Sorry, that's exactly how it was.
And I agree with that. I agree with that at the time, and I agree with that now. Here we find ourselves in this absolute mess that's been created by these little despots all across the country, whether it's governors or mayors or whoever. This is how we have to handle this. I mean, look, you open, or the woman in, there's a woman who opened a salon, a hairstyling salon. I don't recall. It was, I saw it on Twitter, and she was arrested. And the judge says, you apologize and pay a fine and apologize. And she said, no, I'm not going to do that. It was an amazing thing for me to watch because, again, she acted in the manner that you suggest, but, I don't know what to say about this, except who's going to stand up for us?
I would like to use an illustration that happened in our history. And this is an illustration of exactly the same thing that's going on today. Okay? Exactly the same thing. Happened in 1916 and 1917. 1916, Wilson, Woodrow Wilson, was elected to office because his platform said, I kept you out of the war. And everybody cheered, and everybody, and he was elected. And now he's serving his next 4-year term. Now, we don't know this unless, of course, you read the books that I write and get in the information that I've got. But they hired a legal firm. This is all explained in my books, okay? They hired a legal firm. They mean the federal government. And the purpose of this legal firm was to get us on a war footing. Now, this happened like in January, February, March. This legal firm went to work. Now, the people in the basements in England were concocting things about the wickedness of the Huns. And they sent that over to the advertising agency in the United States. And the advertising agency did such a good job that when the Lusitania sunk, about 6 months later, everybody was ready to go to war. They voted for Wilson because he kept them out of the war. But then the government, the federal government and the media changed places and began to encourage everybody. We've got to go to war. Look what these Huns are doing. This is terrible. On and on and on and on. We got so mad, we went to war. But all the stuff coming out of the basements of England about the Huns was lies. Every bit were lies. And that's where we are today. We're doing exactly the same thing. This is not the first time. This is not the second. This is not the third. It's not the fourth. We've been conned by the government regularly. And I go through my books, 2, 4, 2, 3, 4, and 5, use illustration after illustration where we have been conned. Even the environment. You remember the ozone stuff? You've got to study a little bit about the ozone. That's all written up in volume 4, the last little bit of the environmental part. That the ozone layer exists. Oh, it's way high. And it's millions and millions of cubic miles of space. It's created over the Antarctic in cold, cold weather. When it's needed, nature creates it. When it's not needed, nature doesn't create it. And there's the deal. Doesn't matter how much stuff we use to propel our thing, no matter how much radiator fluid we use, doesn't matter. The ozone created by nature. And guys, that's how it works. We're not in our minuscule little things. We're not going to affect nature. But guys, we are going along with the lies of the government, the lies of the environmentalists. Because we don't learn what's happening to us. That's why people write books to teach things, to teach people items. Books are all over us. Sure, we sell books because we want to impart information. I mean, I'm talking to I don't know how many people about the environmental stuff, but unless you read it, I can't give you all the details of how minuscule the effect of our actions in the United States were on the ozone layer. Absolutely minuscule. I mean, the tip of a pin is about how much effect our activities would have had on the ozone layer. Yet we all changed. The manufacturing industry changed. We changed everything. The aerosol bottles, all these things were changed because of a lie. Let's go back to a book called Silent Spring in the 50s, a made up story about eggs being hurt by DDT. So what did we do? As a world, we banned DDT. It still is banned. And malaria took over in Africa, and millions of people have died because of a lie in the book Silent Spring. Because we agree with the lie, because we're conditioned to agree with the lie. Folks, we must stop this. We must get back our rights, our freedoms, our liberties, everything. And the only way we're going to do it is to stand up. We don't have to stand up with armaments and guns. I watched a video this week. It's 11 minutes long about a guy and a Marine in California standing in front of, along with a lot of other protesters, children, women, people, everybody. They weren't doing anything. They were just talking, holding signs. They were all together. The military might of the state was lined up in front of them, 4 deep. I'm 50 yards across, I guess. It was a long ways across, maybe not 50 yards. Anyway, 40, this Marine standing up there, he was talking about the rights of the people. Did I really serve to have this kind of thing happen in America? Will you people go home tonight and tell your children that you beat an old man, an old pastor to death because he wasn't doing something? Not to death. You beat a pastor because he wasn't doing what he ought to do? Are you going to take those batons? Are you going to beat on the people in this congregation or peacefully assembling? And he talked like that for several minutes. And guess what? All the might of the state moved away. They all moved away. And that's what he did, and they did in California. Folks, we've got to think about what can we do, and we don't have to bow down to this stuff. We don't have to. The only reason that Judge Bradley got to say anything was because somebody was cited and taken to court, and she put them in their place. It's a state court.
Right.
Anyway, folks, we must do it. We must. And if they take me to court because of the way I talk, I'll say, okay, guys, I'm here. Do what you want to do, but here's the Constitution, and I'll carry it with me, my little folder. I'll carry it with me. We'll read the Constitution together, and then we'll talk about your oath of office, Judge. Your oath of office. Are you really going to violate it? I don't know what will happen. Maybe I'll be a historical person like him, thrown in jail. Maybe it'll be like Ruby, the black lady who wouldn't sit in the back of the bus because her feet were tired. Oh, yes, there are champions in our society, but they're not people who gave in. They're not people who gave in.
Okay. And I totally agree with that. Okay. But just a recap here. We're seeing, as I mentioned, a hair salon, the owner of a hair salon being sent to jail for 7 days for what? For reopening her business so her employees can earn money and she could provide for her family. A SWAT team in Dallas County was sent to a bar, was sent to a bar that reopened. We have helicopters and drones specifically taking, making sure people are social distancing, and helicopters enforcing the law. We've got Chinese-made drones.
No, not the law. There's no law here.
And enforcing.
There's usually no law.
Okay.
Yes.
So then you've got, these snitch hotlines as well. So people can tell on other people and
snitch.
Exactly. And now you've got the politicians saying, this is the way it's going to be. This is the new normal. And it blows my mind that people accept this. And you're right. We have to stand up. But, do you see that happening, Dr. Proctor? Well,
people are doing it. People are standing up.
Are enough.
But I don't see enough of it.
That's it.
Mostly what I see is people giving in. Oh, yes, that's what they said. We must do it. Oh, yes. Black is white. I know it is because they said it was. That's where we are, folks. That is where we are. Let's us, the group of us who are knowledgeable here, speak up.
I totally agree.
It may not matter. It may not matter, but it will matter to my personal feelings about my life, and I can say to my grandchildren, I stood up. I did what I should do.
And that's really, in my view, if we are comfortable with answering the question or looking ourselves in the mirror and saying, I did everything possible that I could possibly do, then that's all we can do. I mean, the effort is up to us. The results, in my view, are up to God, right? That's...
yes.
So if you were advising, well, you are advising all of our viewers and listeners. I mean, I guess
can't say anything different, Doug. That's exactly how I feel. I'll say lots of it, but I can't say anything different.
And I totally agree with that. I agree with your position. We've become so tolerant. Coach Dave Dobmeier was either yesterday or today was wearing a shirt that had the word intolerant across the front. And we've become too tolerant of things, too tolerant of this tyranny that's going on, haven't we?
Yes, we have. By the way, just for interest, this week, Coach Dave sent in an order and bought one of my Saving the Constitution books. And I appreciated that. I thought myself, he'll do something with it. Things will happen.
And, you know, that's another thing, too, if we can address this, because I think it's important that people have this in their hands. And people always accuse me, well, you're just, you know, you're just trying to sell books. No, you know what? Not really. Although, yeah, I mean, obviously. But it's the information in the book that's so important to me. And I think your book is making a difference. Do you feel, and this sounds like a softball and sophomore question, but do you feel that the information in your book can educate the population enough to act?
Oh, absolutely. Okay. Absolutely. Our people are not dummies, okay? Our people aren't dummies. They just aren't informed. And if they would pick up the book and scan it, read parts, see what it says, see what the rights are, read, I referenced today Article 6, yep. Amendment 4, Amendment 5, Amendment 6, and Amendment 7. Just read those. Just read those. And that's not a lot. That's not a lot.
Not at all.
It's right in the book in order. All you got to do is look through it. It's in order. The amendments are all right in order. The articles are right in order. The paragraphs are right in order. Just look at it and read what it says and think about what the Constitution says. Ponder. What does it say? That can make a big difference in our country if they just do that. But, you know, I could hold up the Constitution and say, just read the Constitution. Well, it doesn't have the same impact because it's hard to read the words. They're difficult words. They're not written in our language. They're written in the English language of the 1700s. So I tried to write it in our language. It doesn't take long to read those three amendments and the Article 6, Paragraph 3. Doesn't take long.
No, not at all. I have to say the book itself, your book itself it's an easy read. And by easy, I mean, it's easily understood and it's well laid out. And but I don't want to diminish its importance by saying it's an easy read. So don't take that the wrong way. It's an important read. All right. I'm fed up, Dr. Proctor. I'm just so fed up with people just accepting everything at face value and just surrendering their rights. The episode I did yesterday, I titled it, something to the effect of, why aren't good people staying silent? You know, and that's kind of what's been bothering me today in preparation of this show. The book on my desk, Saving the Constitution. I looked at that and I'm thinking, can we save the Constitution? Can we save our rights? Can we preserve? And you know, I'll die trying, but on the whole, do you believe we can save this country?
We did once. It was the Revolutionary War. We saved this country. We got together and amassed, even though 90% plus didn't do anything at all. Many, many moved to Canada. I understand those. You don't like it here, move somewhere else. I understand that. But we did save it in 1776 to 1781. We did save it. Then we did write a book and ratified it. I mean, write a constitution in 1788 and ratified it they wrote it in 1787 and ratified it in 1788.
Right.
So we did those things. We, the people, did those things. We can do it again. Will we? That's the question. Will we?
That's a big question. And I think now I'll pose this as a question to you. Do you believe that the events that we're seeing, the events of today, do you believe that we are seeing not just the problems, but an opportunity for patriots and followers of the Constitution to make that difference? Because with every problem if you're presented with a problem, you're also presented with opportunities to fix that problem.
Yes.
Okay. So,
yes.
Yeah. I think now's the time to act, I think.
Yes, it's the time. I'm astounded. Now, I got to use the words this way. I was inspired to write that book. I was compelled by inspiration to write the book, Saving the Constitution. Published it 1 year ago. Had no idea that 6 months later, in January, we'd be in the middle of this. It's very apropos. And it's the only book that explains the Constitution like this. It's the only one. Every time somebody says, well, this guy, he does it too. Then I look into it and I find that guy doesn't do it either. Nobody does it. No one teaches the Constitution. They teach philosophy. They teach about it. They teach around it. They teach why. They teach the history. But to take the document itself and paragraph by paragraph say, this is what it says in today's vernacular. Nobody does that except this book. And that's, I'm amazed. And sometimes I look at the words of the books that I've written and I say, how did I possibly write that? How could that be done? I don't have that kind of thought process. How did I do that? Well, I know how I did it. I was inspired and aided to do it. That's why it's there. That's why I wrote it. I wrote these things down because I've been talking about them and nobody was remembering. Nobody was listening. I'm talking about my family now. They still aren't. Anyway, nobody was listening and I wasn't getting my point across. And I thought, well, the day will come when I can no longer talk about these things. Let's write them down. And I started in 2005 writing them all down.
You did
and
well.
Now we have.
You did well.
Thank you. I tried to do my best. I've read them over and over and over again. I read them each over and over before they were published to make sure that they were what I wanted to have. I missed some typos. I did. I missed typos. I see what I think I see because I think I remember what I wrote there. So I miss typos. Sometimes I double word. Sometimes I leave a word out. Folks, the information's there. My imperfections are there too.
You know, I didn't find any, and I read, and I'm serious. I read the book cover to cover. If I did, you know, if there were any, I didn't see any. It's interesting they say intelligent people can fill in the blanks. So if you miss like an E on THE, or if you forget an article or a preposition or whatever, most intelligent people see it even though it's not there. So that's my story. I'm sticking to it.
What happens to me mostly is I spell the H-E, and the computer knows that's right.
Yeah, and believe me, I've been there. And then it survives edits the editorial process, and I don't know how that happens, but... Yeah, it's amazing. All right. I've got a question for you that is really interesting. This is from a listener, Mike, Mike W. Thank you very much. I'm going to toss this out because we were talking about mass earlier and we're not too far away from that topic right now. And the reason, and Eric the Tech and I had some dialogue about this earlier, and this kind of is an interesting question. And if you think about it a little bit, I thought, my goodness, it's interesting. Now this from Mike W. There are many places here in the United States where you can be fined for hiding your face, for wearing a mask. Okay. I mean, think pre-COVID-19, for example, you could be fined for wearing a mask in some cases in a bank. All right. So he writes this: would it also be true that being forced to wear a mask could be lawfully enforced versus recommended in the same areas? Let me repeat that for you again without me stuttering. Would it also be true that being forced to wear a mask could be lawfully enforced versus recommended in these same areas, in the areas where it's unlawful, or I'm sorry, where you can be fined for wearing a mask? Kind of an interesting.
Oh, what an idea. What an interesting thought. Obviously, today you'd find you if you don't wear a mask in those places. Isn't that what's being done?
Yes, yes.
And so we're all topsy-turvy. We're topsy-turvy. Anytime you try to violate the normal, it's topsy-turvy. Anytime. I understand why you can't wear a mask in a bank. That's what bad people do. I understand that. Okay? I understand why there are places that are conducive. Honest people will be honest people, and bad people will be indicated by what they wear, what they do, what they have on, what they've got in their hands. Guns, for example. Okay? I can understand banning those kinds of things in that kind of environment. But today it's all topsy-turvy. Now we're being forced to wear things that we wouldn't wear otherwise because we just want to live. just want to go out on the street. We're being forced to stay away from people. I don't want to stay away from people. I want to talk to my neighbors. I don't think I should get within 6 inches, but I want to be normal distance. I want to have activities in my home. I want to have activities that go to activities in other people's homes. I want to have my life the way it was before January of this year. But we're not allowing it. We, the people, are saying, we don't want that anymore. We want to change. But the people don't really want to change. They're being hoodwinked into changing. They're being scared into changing. I saw some stuff about vitamin D here a couple of days ago. An interesting analysis that I can't put all the stuff up that the physician did, but he said, in essence, that there are three kinds of people running around our nation in various stages of vitamin D. A study was done. Now, there's a lot of studies out there to talk about, but this one's not being talked about. He even said those words. Anyway, vitamin D, he said, if a person is healthy and has significant and has the right levels of vitamin D, then they were something like 50% or 60% of the deaths that occurred from this disease. And the deaths from the disease have been verified that they did die from this disease. Okay? And they took those and they categorized them. And only 4% were completely deficient in vitamin D. And a whole bunch were negligent in vitamin D, and that was like 80% were negligent in vitamin D. Now, I don't remember all the statistics. I sent that document, that it's a YouTube type thing, and I sent it to you, Dave, and I'll send it to anybody who wants to see it, because I've got it here on my computer now. But anyway, so then he wound up saying a very few died that had good vitamin D levels. 80% of those that had poor vitamin D levels died. 99% of those that were very deficient in vitamin D died. Then he went on to say vitamin D is a killer of this disease. Why isn't this being blasted from the rooftops? Maybe because it's not expensive. It's cheap. In fact, it's free. He said the sunlight, that's vitamin D. So I got to thinking, we're all being confined to our homes. Sunlight gives us vitamin D. Milk has vitamin D, but a lot of adults won't drink milk because that's for kiddies. That's for babies. I don't drink milk. Aha. But it's enriched with vitamin D. We're becoming deficient in vitamin D. We're being told to stay in our homes out of the sun and therefore becoming deficient in vitamin D. And now if we get the disease, we're susceptible to it more than we would have been. Nothing to do with masks. It's to do with you don't have enough natural stuff from the sun in your bodies. And he would like everybody to know it, but they're not telling anybody.
You know, it makes little sense. You've got the benefits, as you mentioned, the vitamin D, the sunlight, microbes in the sand and the ground, the salt water. I'm talking about it at the beaches, especially, you know, the Atlantic and Pacific, the salt water bodies. And, again, the sun, the sand, the benefits of those in the beaches. And we're not allowed to go to the beach, yet we're being forced or we're being pushed to accept a vaccination protocol that is just insane. As a matter of fact, I watched it's a video that's being banned now, but I watched this 26 minutes long, where just as an example, what you mentioned, the immunity, our immunity, those people with good immune systems, I took some notes here and I'm looking at this, have less of a chance of contracting or with, you know, if your immune system is up, vitamin D included, zinc levels included, you've got less of a chance of contracting this virus. Yet the natural protocols, including the vitamin D, including the sunlight, are being replaced by the patented pharmaceutical vaccinations and drugs and such. established drugs that have been around for, you know, 100 years are not allowed. But the more expensive kind are and are being pushed. As a matter of fact, one more thing, the flu vaccination, those who got it last year, and this was the case in Italy, this was the case apparently a study done by the, through the military, flu vaccination. If you got a flu vaccine, a flu shot, the increase of you getting COVID-19 increased by 36%. So, you know, and that's because the flu vaccine contained four different strains of active virus, including H1N1, according to this this study. So it's you're right. I mean, so why is that? Is it just purely money? Is the motivating factor? Is that what it's all about in this case?
Remember, I refer back to my videos. I do have videos, but that's not this. Okay, I refer back to my volume, Liberty Series.
Right.
I believe 100%. I can't say I know because I didn't see all these things personally happen, but I believe 100%. Well, you know what they say? If it looks like a duck, and it quacks like a duck, and it walks like a duck, it must be a duck. Must be not a turkey. Right. Must be a duck. So, given that, I have studied for 50 years, starting with Cleon Skousen and all of his works. I studied for 50 years this kind of thing in government. And I've written that information down in my Liberty Series. And I have time after time after time, I see government involved in something for power, control, and money. It's not just money. It's power and control. And money. Money is very important. Our banking industry, through our banking industry, we send billions of dollars a year to the people who are coming back and doing these things to us. Our debts are sending money back to the people in charge of ruining our lives through these kinds of things. So give you an idea. That's what's going on in our society. That's what these books teach or explain or show, documented all the way through, articles by people, references from books. You have to use books because that's where information comes from. I've got books that were written by a guy by the name of Joe Robison, published in 1798, so I could study better the Illuminati and what it does and what is going on. Eyewitness accounts, I used his books to discuss that. I use the stuff of Washington. I use the stuff of Adam Smith back in the 1700s. I wasn't here. I couldn't see it, but I could read the books that were written on it, and I did. And, folks, that's how you learn. And those items are repetitive, not just once or twice. It's repetitive, and it's all after control, money, and power.
Control, money, and power. Yes. And that's it. Folks, you're listening to the Hagmann Report on this fifth or sixth day of May 2020. My guest, of course, is Dr. Richard Proctor, the author of Saving the Constitution, A Constitution If You Can Keep It, and many other books, including the Liberty Series, which is over my shoulder there in the camera shot if you're watching this. But the Saving the Constitution, folks, is an important read. I would urge everyone listening to get this. In fact, get two. One, you can give to your pastor, neighbor, friend, family member, whatever. Educate them. Hey, even your county sheriff. Folks, we're going to be right back after this network break. Stay right where you're at.
Reporting on what the mainstream media won't, you're listening to the Hagmann and Hagmann Report on the Global Star Radio Network.
Welcome back to Hagman. It's the Hagman Report, where truth can't be silenced. You know, I've got to have a big note in front of me just to remind me to say that more often, where truth can't be silenced, because there's so many people out there, and folks, I want to convey to you how important it is to understand how the efforts of this small group of people are attempting to silence people who are telling the truth, attempting to silence people who are trying to get information out there. Look at the various videos that are being absolutely banned from Twitter and Facebook and even YouTube. Okay. It's just amazing how many things are not being indexed, how many stories are not being indexed by Google and Alphabet. It's something to watch how we are being controlled. And I'm so glad to have with me today, Dr. Richard Proctor, Saving the Constitution. That's the keystone work of his, I shouldn't say keystone. This is one of the more popular books. And I think it's required reading if you haven't gotten this already. And you may think, well, I've got a copy of the Constitution. Why would I need this? Because this tells you in plain language, and it's applicable to today, about the Constitution. A Constitution, if you can keep it, especially if you're doing homeschooling, and most of you are. And even if you're not, this is absolutely required in my view. Good for adults as well as school-age children, and good for everybody, actually. It's kind of a study. It's a study book. I look at this as a study book. That's the way I look at it. And, of course, the Liberty series over my shoulder, other shoulder. I'll get it at one point, which is really gets into detail. And then there's other books at provisinstitute.com. That's provisinstitute.com. That's where you can find it, these books. The link will be in the program description box at HagmanReportLive.com. And real quick, before I get back to Dr. Proctor, I got to tell you, folks, if you haven't done so already, go to HagmanStore.com. That's HagmanStore.com. Oh my goodness, we're getting orders for coffee. Get your coffee while you can. Detective's Choice Coffee. Man, I'll tell you what, it's hyper-caffeinated. It comes in K-cups and whole bean and ground. It's good stuff. I've been getting all sorts of great reviews by email, so great testimonials and such, as well as Patriot Blend and Revolution Blend. We have our bags back. We're shipping out now. Get it while you can. And by the way, makes for good barter if that becomes necessary. So HagmanStore.com, that's HagmanStore.com. And I want to thank Dr. Richard Proctor, ProvisInstitute.com, for hanging with me through the break and being part of this program. Sir, what would you like to get into that you think is, is important, whether it be historically speaking or insightful for the future? Talk to me. What do you think? What do you think we need to talk about?
What should we need to talk about?
Yep.
We've been talking about what we need to talk about.
Okay.
What more should we talk about? You asked me that just a minute ago before we came on the air.
Yep.
And now you're asking me on the air.
Yep.
And I'm saying to myself, boy, we talk about these, the same thing. What different? I go back into my thoughts about history.
Mm-hmm.
If we don't learn from history, we're condemned to repeat it. We say that, and it's obvious that's true. If we don't learn from history, we're condemned to repeat it. If we don't learn from what happened during the Revolutionary War, we'll be condemned to repeat it. What should we have learned? We should have learned that England overstepped its bounds. Therefore, we separated and had to fight a bloody war to do it. Then, today, we're learning that it's not England that's overstepping its bounds in our concern. It's our federal government that's overstepping its bounds. Now, are we going to have to fight a bloody war to fix that too? Or can we just do it by taking advantage of the tools we have? I do a lot of economics. Perhaps that's a subject we haven't treated today that we need to think about. The government seems...
I'm sorry. Yeah. I can't wait because I've been talking about this. You know, I get like fired up because what is happening now with this response to this virus, it is destroying our country. It's not the virus. It's the response. It's the shutdown. And look, with all respect to the victims and families of the victims of this virus, look, I understand and my heart goes out to you, but you know what? You quarantine the sick. You don't shut down the country. So go ahead. I'm just like really excited because the economic impact is tremendous. Go ahead, sir.
The economic impact is going to live with us for years. I heard you mention a few restaurants that couldn't reopen. It wasn't the government. They just couldn't reopen. The chicken plants that we talked about a week ago, millions of chickens being destroyed, plants being shut down. It's going to be very hard to reopen those plants. They didn't open in a day. They opened over several months. That's the kind of problem. The farmers, they're plowing their fields or they're not, or they're just rotting in the fields. That's our food we're going to need. Folks, we are allowing the government to destroy our country. Look at these bailouts. Oh dear me. They passed this CARES bill. Oh my. Everybody one person that I know of stood up against it and said, this is not right. But everybody else boo-hooed him, ridiculed him, and yelled at him, including our young president. Now, what we have here is we have a bill that's giving, the word giving is the key here, billions of dollars, I guess that's going to be the term, billions, out to the citizens of the United States that paid taxes. Well, that's very nice. I'm glad they're doing that. I'm not either glad they're doing it. It's very nice, but it leads to terrible, terrible inflation. Germany, let's go back into a little bit of the history. Let's go back to World War I, the Treaty of Versailles. The Treaty of Versailles was destructive of the country of Germany, terribly destructive. We were very revengeful. Well, I don't know, maybe we should have been. But what we did in this revengeful item was we destroyed the economy of Germany. So what did they do? They just printed more marks. They printed marks. They got to the point where you had to have your paycheck each morning and each afternoon to buy the stuff because the price was going to go up, so you couldn't afford to buy it tomorrow with the money you earned today. That's the problem. They call it hyperinflation. There's nothing worse in an economy than hyperinflation. And these things that the government is doing to save us because they don't want us to work, so they're going to save us. Come on, that's not the right way. The right way to save us is don't print money and let us go to work. But if you're going to keep us from work, then print money. That's two strikes against us. First, we won't be able to earn money because we haven't got a job. And now the government's giving it to us, which will be an inflationary item, which will destroy the money that we have already. I heard the term, and it's an excellent term, called an inflation tax. Printing money. Even if you have money in your, you know, many people don't want to put money in the bank because they're afraid the bank will be robbed. Okay, or they can't get it out, or there'll be a run on the bank, or whatever. So they keep it in their mattress. Well, an inflation tax gets to your mattress money too. So if you have money today, let's just use an illustration. This is not a true illustration, but it gets the point across. If you have $1 million in your society today, and your society is running okay, and the government says, it's running okay, but let's help everybody. And they gave everybody the equivalent of $1 million again. And the price of milk was $1 a gallon when the amount of money was $1 million. After that, $2 million gets in, the price of milk will now be $2. It won't be $1 anymore. It will be $2. So we won't be any different than we were before. Everything will just cost more, but we'll be in exactly the same place. But if they gave out $10 million when it used to be one, now we're going to have inflation that would destroy the country, and you won't be able to get any milk because people won't be able to produce it. And that's where we're headed. We're headed for massive inflation. If they do what they say they're going to do, they're going to send out that $1,200 again. They're considering it. They're going to send out money to everybody. They're sending out money to businesses to keep them going. They're sending out money to everybody. But that's not how you do it. How you do it is send them customers. And how you send them customers is get them to work. And how you get them to work is stop these ridiculous edicts. The government must stop. Economically, they are destroying. We are destroying ourselves. We're committing national suicide. Everybody says we got to wear a mask to protect ourselves. That's just lemmings running off the cliff. We've got to do something. We've got to protect ourselves by going back to work, by socializing again. I read an article yesterday about a child psychologist saying this short time already is affecting the growth and the growth rate and the social activities of our children. I have a young son. We went to Italy, and he was not able to associate with the kids very well. He didn't speak the language. I mean, I was there for 2 years. It affected his growth. It was terrible. He slowed him down. Now, folks, these are the kinds of things that happen. We're doing that to ourselves. Why? Because we are obeying edicts that are unconstitutional. We're obeying things the government are saying. So we're destroying our economy. We're destroying our social life. We're destroying everything America stands for. We are destroying it. How are we, the people, destroying it? By condescending to do what the government wants us to do, to control us, to take power over us. And they're exercising.
And they're,
economically.
They're doing it by fear, too. I mean, primarily by fear,
well, yes.
Whether there's fear of the virus or fear of the punishment. Go ahead.
Well, they started out being afraid of the virus. Now they're afraid of the punishment. Doesn't matter. Fear is the key. If you're afraid of something, don't get out of bed today. You might be in an automobile accident. Don't get in your car. Oh, no. Oh, perish the thought. Millions of people die in the cars. So far, we haven't had millions of people die of these diseases at all, but they do die in the cars. Now, not in a year, over a period of time, the cars die. People die in cars. I'm not going to get in another car. I might die. Oh, bathtubs. People drown in bathtubs. I'm not going to take another bath. Swimming pools. Oh, I won't go to swimming anymore. There are sharks in the ocean. By the way, when Jaws came out, people stopped going to the beaches and swimming in the ocean because they were afraid of a shark. Well, the sharks existed in the oceans before Jaws came out, and we seem to get along okay. There are instances, yes, I'm not going to say there aren't instances, and those things are really bad. I understand. They are really bad. But a million people stay home because one person got caught with a shark? No. That's fear taken to the point where you destroy yourself because of fear. Because of fear. Nobody seems to be afraid of going to war. They get all excited about war and going to war. They're not afraid of that. And they know a whole bunch of them aren't going to come back. But we still run off to do that because the media and the government wants us to. You notice that the government who causes the war never goes there? Just the people.
Yeah.
Just the king never went to war, but the people did.
Ah. Yeah, you're going to vote for war? Send your family, your children.
Which
makes
first.
Sense. Yeah.
Yeah, they go first. You want to have a war, they go. The first pages of my first volume talk about the horrors of the 19th century, the one we just left. And it's all government done. Every one of all that horror is government done. It's not disease done, it's government done. Every one of those instances are government destroying their own people. Guys, we're in the middle of it. The United States is being destroyed by government, and we're going right along with them in lockstep. Oh, yeah, well, we're not supposed to go to work. We won't go to work. I shouldn't open. I'm not going to open. Those restaurateurs that wanted to open their restaurants in New York, I believe we talked about that the other day.
Yep.
Go open, guys, open. Well, I've got to have a license to open. Who gave you the license? The government. The government will revoke the license. They can turn off your gas, but they probably wouldn't. They can turn off your electric. They can fine you. They can do all kinds of stuff. Stand on your constitutional rights to have a business. It's your constitutional right.
Stand together. Yeah, you know, that's
yes.
The thing.
We've all got to do it.
Yes.
We've all got to do it.
Yeah, and I, you know, I. Again, I'm going to reference Coach Dave Dobmeier one more time. We get to talking about, well, what can we do? And, you know, it is so frustrating that we as Christian conservatives, we can't organize, I don't know, we can't organize a Boy Scout troop, okay, apparently. We can't lead, you know, a group of children for crying out loud. It seems like because no one, you know, it's not the fact that we want to be leaders. We want someone to, we want people to get together and to stand up, rise up together as well, and to have each other's backs. You know, that's all we want. We want people. I mean, if everyone who feels the way we do stood up, and said, we're not going to take this anymore, there wouldn't have to be a shot fired. I contend, you know, and let me ask you this. I contend, and tell me if I'm wrong, that if we do not engage in peaceful civil disobedience right now, by that I mean opening up the restaurants, refusing to wear a mask, 24/7, refusing to be afraid. If we don't engage in civil disobedience today, there will be bloodshed tomorrow. And by that I mean civil war in this country tomorrow. I feel that way.
That's exactly what will happen. Exactly what will happen. And I don't want that to happen. I want everybody to stand today. Let me just use an illustration. Costco said you can't come into our store unless you wear a mask. Don't go. Don't ever go to Costco again. I don't mean ever. I mean until they get the picture, they're not going to require that. If Walmart's going to go and put arrows on their streets, on their aisles, and you got to walk the other way. If they throw you out, everybody walk the other way. Everybody gets thrown out. The only way we can get these people to pay attention to us is to act as a huge unit. A huge unit, not one person. I'm already doing it, but no, as I walk the other way, people chuckle and they laugh and they chuckle. They're not upset. They chuckle, but they don't walk with me. And that's the key. Come on, everybody.
You just said awful. That's right. They don't walk with you. They may agree with you. There's that tacit approval. Oh yeah, but they're not walking with you. So
yes.
That's the key. We need everyone to stand up. And I would encourage that. And by doing this, I argue that we are actually preventing an otherwise inevitable civil conflict in the streets. There will be blood in the streets because at some point people are going to start snapping and saying enough is enough. By the way, I want to plug your book because this other book. Yeah, you know, I do. I love this book too. Bathroom Economics. Understanding Economics in Just a Few Sittings. A wonderful title of this book, by the way. And I'll tell you something. Look, folks, if you want to understand economics, here it is. Just like the Constitution. You want to understand the Constitution? Here it is. Economics, same thing. We haven't talked about this book before. We haven't. And I don't know why, but we haven't. I got to tell you, this book blew me away in a couple of different areas. We don't have to get into it right now, but you're right. To get back to our point, we need to all stand up and say, we're not going to take this. You know, the governors, who've issued these stay at home orders and shutting down businesses, or you're going to get fines. There are two Arizona sheriffs. I just want to make mention of this. Doug Schuster of Mojave County and Mark Lamb of Pinal County in Arizona said that they're not going to enforce the governor's orders at all because they're constitutional. And, you know, I'm looking at this story. I'm thinking, why aren't all sheriffs doing that? Saying, no, we're not going to do this.
You know? Yes, exactly. That would do the trick, wouldn't it?
I would think.
And the people would then respond. By the way, an interesting thing happened yesterday. I got an order for a book, Saving the Constitution, from the Office of the Governor of South Dakota.
Yeah, I've got some inside information on that. We have, frankly, we've got some politicians that listen to this show and watch.
Excellent.
This show. I'll just leave it at that. So.
Good enough. Yes. Excellent. This is a good place for them to listen.
That's right.
We need more politicians to listen to That's this right. show.
And I can tell you this, a couple of copies have recently made it to Capitol Hill, although you would not necessarily know that because the people who ordered it are their staff members. So, but nonetheless, it's fine. You know, so there are people that are paying attention.
This book needs to be in every home of anybody who wants our Constitution upheld. Needs to be there.
Now see, from that, and thank you for saying that, and thank you for giving me that input, because now I feel like we're making a difference. Not just you having written the book, but we as a platform are making a little bit of a difference, making a dent. And if people have the knowledge, then perhaps that'll spur them to action. I'm that's what I'm hoping for. So it makes me feel
I'm having to make at this moment I'm having to make huge orders about every week.
Okay.
To keep the book on the shelf.
That's good.
I have had a couple of times when I've ran out, so a couple of orders went out later than I wanted.
Well, better late than never, and I think that the information, you know, the information that's contained in this book reinforces what we need to do. It doesn't get old or stale, and it's speaking of old or stale, it's amazing. I find it amazing as well. I've been using that word a lot too lately, but I think it's appropriate that people look at our Constitution as archaic and they want to change it.
It's a perfect document.
Yeah. Yeah.
The Ten Commandments, they're archaic too, right?
Yeah, exactly.
It's a perfect
document. Let's change those a little bit. Yeah, right. Or better yet,
yeah,
just
we got to change
down.
Those because we've got to bring them up to date. A little bit of adultery, that'll be okay. Yeah. Covet. Yeah. I want to covet this. That'll be all right. Because that's the way society is there. We best change the Ten Commandments. That's the same analysis of let's change the Constitution. It is a perfect document inspired by God to be what it is.
That's right.
Nice.
It's right. And you know what they did with the Ten Commandments, ripping them out of schools and taking them off of, you know, out of the public square, out of the courthouses in certain cases. Again, you know, this is where the Constitution is headed unless we step in and do something, but we have to do it all together. And I'm.
Yes.
Yeah. That's right.
All together.
Absolutely. The response by the police departments. I showed a clip of Dan Bongino. Now he's very much pro law enforcement, you know, as am I. Okay, I've got friends who are police officers, friends in different levels of enforcement, but he was just astounded that there are police officers who will engage in unconstitutional acts and say, "I'm just following orders." That's that Nuremberg excuse, you know. And
that's the Nuremberg deal, and we showed that was not a good one, didn't we? Then
that's right. That's right. So, do you see from, I guess now I'm going to ask you for a little bit of, oh, I don't know, speculation or reasoned speculation based on what you've seen in your life experience. Where do you see us going? I guess I'll leave that open-ended. Where do you see us going this as a country, this summer? Because I personally, I see problems.
If we do not become disapathated, is that a good word? Disapathated?
I'll do, yeah.
If we do not change our course that we're seeing right now this month, then we're in for significant inflation, significant shortages of everything we have and everything we want to buy. We're going to see government rationing. We're going to see lines that we used to think only belonged in Russia. We're going to see those kinds of lines. Things are empty shelves today, will be empty tomorrow. More of them will be empty. If we do not change what we're doing, we will go to a complete shutdown of our country as it was in December of last year, 2019. That'll be the last year that our country will be as it used to be if we don't do something about it quickly. Now, I don't mean that we have to get laws passed and get the government to do things different. I mean that we need to do things different. We need to stand together. We're the chief here. We, the people, are the first three words of the Constitution. The first three words, we, the people, they're in big capital letters. Well, they're not capital letters, big fonts. Big font, we, the people. Who are we, the people? We the people are the 320 million people in this country. That's who we the people are. A lot of them are very apathetic. Those of us who don't want to lose our country, and there's a lot of those. We're not talking then about apathy. We're talking about lots of people that are really not apathetic. They want to do something. They don't know what. What to do is to get in groups and do things together. That young Marine that was standing in front of the police was not standing alone. He was standing with a group of about 100 or 200 people who were peacefully assembled, and he spoke for them, and the police responded. If he had been standing alone, they'd have laughed at him. Oh, they wouldn't have laughed at him. Maybe they'd have listened, but it wouldn't have had the effect of those, all those other people with him. He didn't do it by himself. He just did it, and other people were there. If you see someone walking against the arrows, walk with them. If you see somebody not wearing a mask, don't wear one either in the same environment. If you find someone's property, i.e. the store's property, won't let you in unless you're wearing one, don't go there. Go to another one. An illustration of my own self. I go to Home Depot a lot. Well, I go to Home Depot the other day. There's a line out in front. They won't let anybody in the store unless, you know, so many people in the store. Social distancing, you know what I mean?
Sure.
You didn't have to have a mask at that point. They just wouldn't let you in if the number in the store was too big. So I went home, got on the telephone, and ordered online what I wanted. And Home Depot lost the sale. That's the key, folks. And I still got what I wanted very quickly. I still got it without any line. It was delivered to my home a couple days later. That's what you got to do. We've been doing the internet regularly, and we've been closing stores. Radio Shack's closed, I think, because of the internet. And I feel bad about that. It did a good service. Now let's use the internet to close a store or two that's not doing a good service. Use the power we have. Folks, it's available. If we don't stand together, if all the stores don't open, for example, stores that are not, let's say all the bookstores, they're closed. All the bookstores open up. Just open up. All of them. They can't storm everybody. All the bars open up. I mean, I don't think bars should open anyway. I don't believe in alcohol. Nonetheless, it's the concept. Open up.
Sure.
And the SWAT teams are going to come. So what? They can't go to all of them. Open up. Which one will they choose? They're all open. Let's go to the parks. Everybody, go to the parks. You're not social distance. I know. We're shaking hands. We're milling around, touching shoulders. Everybody, go. We've got to do these things or we will lose our country. But the most important is the stores, the businesses have to open up. Now, I have found a business that does everything that I want to do, and I've gone to those businesses, the businesses that wouldn't. I didn't go there. In fact, I was looking around for a little chiropractic stuff. I called a chiropractor and says, are you over 50? Yes, I'm over 50. Then we won't treat you because of the disease. Okay, click. And I went to the next one. He says, come on in. I did, and I'm still going there. Because he opened up and would take care of me, period. Now, that's what we must do. We must get back to work. We must get back to work.
And, you know, again, you point out the importance of the economic aspect of things. And you explain economics in your book, Bathroom Economics. And you're right, you know. And I thought of you when I was reading about the 1,200 dollars per person,
yep.
$2,400.
Yeah. Per person. Yep.
I'm thinking, you know, first of all, where does that come from? It comes from all of us, and it's just so wrong-headed, I believe, because that's not the answer, as you said earlier.
There's no free money. There's no free money. Everybody gets your $1,200, and then the prices will go up to take away the $1,200. It will. They do. That's how it's done.
Yeah.
That's economics. It is a law of economics. I watched Nixon, a little bit of history here. I didn't actually sit in the room, but I watched Nixon put price controls on wage controls and price controls for 90 days back in about 72 or 73.
I remember that. Yep.
Put price controls on. And everybody applied for, let's not do that, let's not do that, let's not do the other. Take an exception. Anyway, after 90 days, they took it off. Zoom! Everybody went in and bought, up went the prices. Didn't stop anything. You cannot stop economic law by passing a law. It won't follow. I can pass a law about gravity tomorrow because I want to jump off this building. So I'm going to pass a law. There's no more gravity. I'm going to jump off the building. Uh-oh. Gravity works no matter. The same kind of thing. You can't pass a law and control economics. It does what it's going to do. The people control economics.
Amen.
Yeah, the people do. So let the market go. The invisible hand is important. It's a very important concept. By the way, a little bit about that book. There's a lot of things going on in our society today. Minimum wage, free trade, socialism, those kinds of things. There's lots of stuff happening. Each one of those and many others, banking, are explained in that book so you can understand it and the effects of each of those things. What is the effect of a minimum wage? Guys, you think you're getting a raise. You're not getting a raise. Minimum wage never gives you a raise. It just allows you a few days of respite. And then the prices all go right back to where they were. They all do. Not where they were before, where they are now based upon the minimum wage change, which will change all the prices of everything you buy. I sold pretzels in California. I sold a lot of pretzels in California. California likes to raise the minimum wage.
Yep.
So they raised the minimum wage. And on the day the minimum wage went up, I put a sign on my cash register. Folks, the only reason we have raised our prices is because the state of California raised the minimum wage. And if we're going to continue to work, we must raise prices. We didn't lose a sale one. Not one.
Hmm. Isn't that interesting? Which kind of segues or dovetails into a chapter in this book. And I want to ask you about this because I thought this was fabulous. The law of creation of value.
You know, that's a new law that I created myself. I thought up myself. It's not written in any economic book but that one.
I know. I thought this was rather impressive. Again, the law of creation of value. And reading that chapter made a whole lot of sense to me. If you want to address that, I would love it because.
Yes. Let's talk about law of creation of value. The law of creation of value, it's been that way always. In fact, if we didn't have money, we would use production as our value. Okay. Let's just remember that premise. Okay. Now let's picture the United States in the early 1800s. If we compared the United States with the early 1800s with the other countries in the world, we were all going around in boats. We were all living about the same standard of living. Everybody had about the same all around the western countries of the world, these Western European and United States areas. Even in South America, everybody was living about the same. Now, the United States was isolated. It had a different government than other places. And it had a different group of people than in other places. The United States was isolated. We really didn't have 100% commerce like we do today with the rest of the world. And as we were developing our land, producing, production, as we were developing our land and we were inventing new things and we were prospering, and as we prospered, our prices went up, yes, but not more than our production. If prices increase along with production, it's fine. It's when when money increases without production, that's when it's not fine. And money increases without production. But if money increases and the production increase, then everything that you make, all the new things that you make can be bought and sold. So people make new things. They make a widget. They make a weed whacker. They make things because they're going to be rewarded. That was the Constitution. Because we're in isolation, because the things that we do for each other affect each other. And as time goes on, this group of people in isolation working with each other and not barring other people from joining, other people could come in. They can come in and participate with us, but everybody working together to further themselves by producing raises standard of living. And we did that throughout the 1900s. We mostly did that because we were going out and finding new land and prospering, but that's just a piece of it. We're also finding new areas of invention today. So everybody in the United States began to work together to prosper each other. And that's exactly what it is. We work together to prosper each other. Now, when the door opened in the 1940s, even after the Depression, when the war opened, but let's not bring the Depression in because that's another factor. When the war opened when the door opened in the 1920s, we found ourselves the wealthiest country in the world. And our standard of living was the highest in the world. When we got into the 50s, our standard of living was still the highest in the world. And we had things nobody else had, and they envied us all over the world because we worked together as a group of people and created value through production and energy together. So I sat down and wrote that law, the law of creation of value. It's not in any other book. Unless they've seen it in my book, they don't know it.
I've never seen that, and I thought that chapter was specifically engaging to me. Anyway, I liked your the concept. I liked the information, and of course the just the summary of as you gave there. I mean, the summary of things, which also kind of brings me to another chapter, I suppose, which is relevant today. You have a chapter on trade agreements, free trade agreement, free trade.
Oh yes, free trade.
And, you know, when I heard that communist China is responsible for what 85% of our medications, we outsource a whole bunch of pharmaceutical stuff to China. Think back to the Kissinger diplomacy with China and all of that. I mean, boy, that really put us in a world of hurt, and I think President Trump is changing that, which also leads to the other chapter about socialism and communism. Anyway, if you want to talk about the...
Well, let's talk about free trade for a minute. I think that's a good thing to talk about.
All right.
Free trade. Free trade. What? I'm just going to start with an illustration. I'm an attorney. I'm really not, but let's pretend. It's a big pretending, but I'll pretend. And I make quite a bit of money as an attorney, and I hire a secretary, and I pay her pretty good because, you know, she's a good young lady. She does good work and keeps my books taken care of, and that's very nice, and I pay her $20 an hour. Well, a young lady moves in down the street who's a pretty good girl too, and she says, Mr. Proctor, I'll come and work for you for $5 an hour. Can I come and work for you for $5 an hour? I guarantee you I can do everything your current secretary is doing. Now I'm going to sit back and think for a minute. $5 an hour instead of $20 an hour? Sure. So I let my young lady, who's very good, go, and I hire the young lady at $5 an hour. Yes, and she does good work, and I'm pleased to death because I've hired that young lady at $5 an hour. That's great. I like that. I make more profit. I make more money for myself. That's free trade. What we've done is we've said in communication with phones, for example, our call-in, where when you dial an 800 number now to call in about a product, where are the people sitting? They're sitting in India. They're sitting in the Philippines. They're sitting in Thailand. So we have exported that job there.
And they're all named Larry. If they're guys, they're all named Larry or Chuck. And if they're women, they're all named, Mary or whatever.
Yeah.
It drives me absolutely. What's your name? I can't do an accent, but oh my word. Yeah. Thank you. Go ahead. It just blows.
I ask him routinely when I call a number like that. I ask him routinely, where are you sitting?
Yeah.
Where are you sitting? Huh? What do you mean? Yeah. Where are you sitting? What
right.
area of the world are you sitting in? Oh, I'm sitting in the Philippines. They'll tell me the city and the island.
Yep.
I'm sitting in India. They'll tell me where they are. And they do their times based on the United States.
Mm-hmm.
They get up and go to work based on U.S. time as if they were here.
Right.
And our companies are treating them as if they were here, but they're paying them as if they were there so they can make more profit. That is exactly the same illustration I just did with the attorney and the secretary. He pays $5 now instead of $20. What does that mean to the secretary that was making $20? She can't go back to work now unless she works for $5. And that's where a country is that does free trade. They reduce their standard of living to the level of the countries that they're hiring the people in. And that's what happened with China. If we don't have a barrier, we can't protect our country. Now, we think of protecting our country as protecting it militarily. That's important, yes. But what we're not protecting is our industry. So if there's a product on the shelf and it costs a couple of dollars more and it's made in the United States, not parts from other places, but made in the United States, buy it. What does that do? That hires another person in the United States. The tariffs they put on steel and aluminum created industries again in the United States. Oh, it was very important for war materials too, but it created things in the United States. Tariffs create jobs. So what I say when somebody says the tariffs are going up, that's terrible. It's a terrible tax. I say all that tax does, they call it it's a border tax, they're calling it. All that's doing is creating jobs for you and your neighbors. Don't buy from stores, if you can, that don't get things that are made in America. They'll be a little more expensive. I use the example of Tierra Liston, Tierra Silón. I think that's how you say it. It's in the book. Their standard of living compared to ours, $20 to us is about 20 cents to them. Okay? I've got a company here in the United States. I make baskets. I make really nice baskets. And I sell my baskets for, $10, $15 each. I make good baskets. And I have a good business making baskets. Now, I hear that if I go to Tierra Liston, if I'm saying that right, it may not be. But anyway, if I can get that country and I can pay them 20 cents instead of $20 an hour or whatever the number is, well, I'll go there. I'll make my baskets there and I'll pay them the 20 cents an hour, whatever the number is, because it's really inexpensive. I'll pay them that amount and I'll make my baskets there. Now, it only costs me about a dime a basket to ship it back to the U.S. I can still sell them for $20. Look at the profit, because there's no tariff bringing those baskets into the United States. Now, there's always some do-gooder that will stand up and say, you're cheating those people. You should pay them the same wage you would pay us here. Okay, well, let's do that. I'm going to go back to that country and I'm going to say, you know, you guys, I've been cheating you. I've been paying all of the workers I have making baskets 15, 10, 20 cents an hour. I'm going to pay you $20 an hour just because you're making baskets and I'm selling them in the United States. What will that do? Well, that'll pay those workers $20 an hour. What will that do to the environment that worker's in? Well, let's see. How many people are going to want to work for the store that pays them 20 cents an hour when they can come and work for me and make $20 an hour? Everybody will want to make baskets in my store and nothing else will get done. We will destroy that economy. So I go to this particular country, smallest country, the smallest standard of living in the world, $600 a year, something like that. And that country will be destroyed by one country, me, making baskets in their country. I will destroy their economy and their entire culture because I raised the wages of one company. And that raised the expectations of everybody, and nobody else could do it, because they weren't exporting all their stuff to the United States and selling it for the prices I sell it here. But what really happens is that other companies begin to do the same thing, and they export to the United States to get the big prices too. Aha, I can export to the United States. There's no tariff. So they begin to export everything they can to us, and we import it, and we buy it at the big prices. They're tickled to death because now they're making profit in their countries. But our businesses that used to make those products are out of business. And so those people have to find new jobs. And they have to find new jobs at a lower rate. And we reduce our standard of living. So what free trade does is destroys the countries where we would go and pay too much for. It destroys our own country when people see that they can send things here cheaply and sell them at our prices. That destroys the businesses here. So as you destroy the businesses here, our jobs all move there. Now our standard of living goes down to theirs. And we are now third in the world in 2014, just because of no tariffs. We're third in the world. The highest one in the world now is $60,000 a year, and we're about 45. We used to be the highest. Now, we're way lower than the highest. That's what free trade does. Now, the economists, they say, just a minute, the law of comparative advantage is in force here. You always do that which you can do best. The law of comparative advantage, a very valid law. That says that if I can make widgets better than anybody else can make widgets, and they'll buy them from me, I'll make widgets and sell them because I can do it better than other people. That's the law of comparative advantage. What that means is that farmers in Florida are not going to raise wheat. Well, they could, but they're not going to raise wheat. And the farmers in Minnesota aren't going to raise oranges. Oh, they could. So let's see. The farmers in Minnesota, they decide they want to raise oranges. Now, that's not the law of comparative advantage. That's not their best advantage, but they want to do it. So the government wants to protect that industry in Minnesota, or whatever state I just said. Doesn't matter. Minnesota's a good state. They want to protect that industry. Do they grow oranges in Minnesota? I don't know, but they can't grow oranges in Minnesota, but they want to grow oranges in Minnesota. So they build big greenhouses, huge greenhouses to raise trees in to grow oranges in Minnesota. Huge greenhouses. Sure, you can do that. Heat them. Oh, yes, you can. You can heat them. And you'll have to bring in lamps to provide a light. You have to bring in light, proper light lamps. You'll do all of that. And the oranges now will cost, $50 each. So the government of Minnesota, knowing that you've got an industry and they want to support the industry, will raise tariffs. You can't bring any oranges into Minnesota unless you charge we can sell them at $50 each. What does that do to the state of Minnesota? All the people there have to buy oranges for $50 each. Or they can drive across the border. I think the border there would be Illinois. And then they can buy them for 50 cents a pound. So they're going to go there, pack their business with oranges, pack their cars and their RVs with oranges and drive back and sell them for $50. That's black market. See what it does? A tariff creates black market. And it destroys other industries. Now, the people in Florida are still raising oranges. Didn't hurt them at all. But the ones that decided to grow wheat, they got to destroy orange groves so they can grow wheat. The law of comparative advantage says you always do that which is best for you. But you must do it within the same geographical and cultural and government area. Because if you cross government lines, all kinds of other factors come into play, not just economics. If you cross government lines, then governments treat their people different, and they don't have the same constitution, and they don't have the same rules. This happened in our country not too long ago. Tariffs on cars are gone. But Mexico, they can drive from Mexico and bring them in for free. So our automobile industry left Detroit, Michigan, Ohio. They left and went to Mexico to build cars and send them back. So all of those areas became a dearth of jobs. Look at where places like Detroit and the places that they used to draw cars, look at what that looks like today. That's a cause of free trade. If there had been no free trade, that means if there had been tariffs on the importing of cars, those jobs would still exist. Those people would still have jobs. Look at our textile industry. It's been destroyed. We probably couldn't even start one again today. Nobody has the equipment. Why? Because we didn't put tariffs on cloth coming into the United States. We reduced them, free trade. We reduced them, and all the countries that could make cloth inexpensively did, shipped it here, and now we use that to make our goods, and our textile industries died. And you can go to the places, the cities where they were. They're ghost towns. That's an effect of free trade. This is not a border tax. This is a protection tariff. And if you read the Constitution very closely, like we should, Article 1, Section 8, Paragraph 1, I'll read it to you. Let's do that. That's much better. I will read the paragraph to you. Article 1, Section 8, paragraph 1 says, the Congress shall have power to lay and collect taxes, duties, imposts, and excises to pay the debts and provide for the government. Okay, first sentence, power to lay and collect taxes, duties, imposts, and excises. Those taxes they're talking about are taxes on goods being imported into the United States. And that's how our government was supposed to support itself. But free trade, there is no income. So we have to do other taxes. Now, that's not all the reason we have other taxes. There's a lot more to it than that. But that's where the government's supposed to get their taxes from, their income from, tariffs. And it worked because we did have tariffs. In the early 1800s, we did have tariffs, and we had tariffs in the 1800s as it went on too, protected our industry, and we did have tariffs up until the do-gooders decided, wouldn't it be nice for us to give free trade with all the countries? And I'll have to say there are many reputable, honest, good economists that teach free trade is good because of the law of comparative advantage. It's only true, the law of comparative advantage only works within a government and geographical area. Geographical area of the United States, that's a geographical area. The government of the United States, that's the government of this country. That government, the Constitution, not the government we have today, the Constitution and the government we had in the 1800s, there were bad parts too, don't get me wrong, but that's the concept. And we thrived free trade. If we had had free trade, there would have been no creation of value. If we'd always had free trade, there would be no creation of value. If we had not been isolated, it wouldn't have worked. Couldn't be done. But we were isolated. We did have tariffs. We were protected. And we did have territory to grow into. And now we haven't got territory to grow into so much as we have new inventions to grow into. New things. TV was invented here. Now it's being manufactured in the Orient. If we were still inventing it here, we would have better TVs than we have today. Now, why did I say that? Because people in America are innovative. They do things better. If free trade had existed completely, the guy who made a weed whacker wouldn't have done it. Because as soon as he made it, even if he patented it, somebody overseas would have made one and sent it to the States, and he wouldn't have been able to do anything. So he wouldn't do it. Free trade. We regulate ourselves to death. I devised a way about 10 years ago to make $250 units of solar energy, of solar panels, $250. I could put solar panels on an entire roof for about, about $2,000, $2,500 or less. So I thought, I'd do this. I know how to do this. Let's set up a business and let's do solar panels. So I got in touch with the city with the utility company because I wanted to connect with them so that we didn't have to rely on solar panels because you cannot. I wanted to have electricity all the time, not just whenever the sun was out. And it ain't out in the darkness at night. So I wanted to have electricity all the time. So I wanted to be hooked in. And they said to me, oh, sure, you can do that. Your product has to pass UL, has to be licensed by the UL. So I went to UL Laboratories to get it licensed, and I talked to them, and I found out $60,000 and about 10 grand a year to be licensed with UL. I didn't make any solar panels, so no neighbors of mine got solar panels. Now, if I didn't have to connect with the utility and I didn't have to do UL, I could do it on my own home. But I didn't want to take the problem of not having electricity at night and not having electricity on rainy days and not having electricity in the wintertime, all the stuff that you can't have it. You got to have it all the time. So I can't do on just my own home. This is not free trade. This is licensing, but it's still an effect of our prosperity, our production, our lives. It's government intrusion into our lives. These are the kinds of things I talk about in my economics book. And I try to talk about it in a way that everybody can easily understand. Everybody knows that diamonds are worth more than sand. Obvious. There's lots of sand. There's very few diamonds. That's the reason. If we had a shortage of sand, it would raise lots of money. It would be highly priced. If there's a special kind of sand, pure sand, it'll cost more than just regular sand. Even then, price of items depends on the availability of the item. Water in the Amazon jungle is not a precious commodity, but in Saudi Arabia, it's a precious commodity. And government will get involved. And if government got involved in sand in Saudi Arabia, it'd be without sand in 5 years. Because government can never do business properly. Ever, 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 ever. They're supposed to preserve our liberties. Whoops, almost up.
Yeah.
They're supposed to preserve our liberties so that we can make the decisions as people. I'll shut up now.
No.
Thank you very much.
Well, audience, our studio audience.
Good.
Yeah, you got a standing ovation there. I want to tell you that was perhaps the best summary. I do suspect you could probably go to an institute of higher learning and spend a lot of money just to hear what you just said. And by the way, I find it very interesting that folks, look, saving, I'll do it this way. This book, being the Keystone, kind of gave way to, maybe not chronologically, but in topically, gave way to this book. They go hand in hand. And, you know, we're out of time, but I was going to ask you, if you can tell me in about a minute and a half, what did President Trump do with respect to our trade? Has he done anything positive?
Oh, yes. He's done some fantastic things with respect to our trade.
That's right.
That's where the term border tax came from. He's done some fantastic things. He's got tariffs on aluminum, and more than that, he's doing things. You know, another piece of free trade is he's lowering taxes. That means our companies can make money here without going overseas. That's a part of free trade. Guys, we can't have free trade. All economics dovetails together, and that book will help you understand it in an easily understood way. That's what it's all about. And there's also two written for school, for homeschooling, easily understood way to learn those concepts.
And you know, what are the globalists, the people with the globalist agenda, what do they want? They want free trade. They want no borders. They don't want any kind of obstructions to this globalist agenda. Oh, my
That's
goodness.
Right.
And there it is.
And it's destroying our country. It's on purpose. It's on purpose. The UN is established to destroy the United States. Did I say that? Yes, I did. And that's what it's for. It's to destroy the United States. Started by the same people that are now killing us or pretending to be killing us with a virus.
There
same
you go.
People. Just a different direction, different subject. Same people. Same people doing all these things. Same people started World War One. Same people started World War Two. Same people.
Exactly. You know, we could talk for another 6 days. Dr. Proctor, I want to thank you so very much. ProvisInstitute.com. That's where to go. We're at the end of the program already. It just flew by. You are a fountain of knowledge, and I want to thank you for that. And I want to thank you for writing the books. And thanks for getting into a little bit of a lot of the economic aspect of things, bathroom economics, folks, as well as saving the Constitution. Go to ProvisInstitute.com and go shopping. And I mean that. Go buying. Thank you, sir. We'll be talking with
you. Take care.
All right.
See you next week.
Amen.
We'll do it again.
All right. Folks, out of time, I want to just say thank you so very much for your belief and your trust in this platform. My goodness, wasn't Dr. Proctor absolutely fantastic, on point, especially with the economic side of things and how things are all interconnected with the globalist agenda. We are out of time. Again, HagmanStore.com for coffee. You got to have coffee, right? At least if you don't drink it yourself, to barter with HagmanStore.com. Hey, get some coffee. Support us, as well as ProvisInstitute.com, that site of my guest books, Saving the Constitution, Bathroom Economics, and the Liberty Series, and more. God bless everyone. Good night.